At noon on KSFR, now looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, August 7th. Pending final approval, Santa Fe public school teachers and some staff are poised to get an overall 1.5% pay raise, the first such hike in 6 years. The newly negotiated salary increase of 0.5% comes atop a 1% increase approved back in May. The tentative agreement between the district and the National Education Association Santa Fe represents the highest average salary increase in New Mexico. The Santa Fe Public School District remains one of the state's lowest funded on a per-student basis. The raises will appear on August 15th paychecks, with a union vote for ratification around the same time. The Office of the U.S. Attorney in New Mexico has announced that the former director of the Taos County Housing Authority and her husband have pleaded guilty to federal conspiracy charges. Carmela and Paul Martinez were charged with stealing federal funds between 2003 and 2011 provided by HUD to Taos County for a program that provides affordable housing for low-income Americans. With their plea agreement, each now faces a maximum penalty of 5 years in federal prison and a $250,000 fine. The couple must also pay some $786,000 in restitution. The City of Santa Fe says its Environmental Services Division will be changing the refuse and recycling service days for thousands of city residents as part of the plan to phase in newly annexed collection areas. They'll begin tagging customers' containers tomorrow and Friday, with the changes effective next week. A somewhat secretive Albuquerque gathering this week of Republican Party heavyweights and their supporters was attended by Governor Susana Martinez. The event at the Hyatt Regency Tamaya Resort featured House Majority Leader Eric Cantor and Mitt Romney running mate Paul Ryan. The confab is rumored to have been sponsored by billionaire Republican Party supporters David and Charles Koch. The resort blocked traffic from entering its grounds during the multi-day gathering and offered no public information. Just ahead of the new school year start next week, Santa Fe County and the New Mexico Department of Health will be sponsoring a free whooping cough or pertussis vaccination clinic tomorrow. Shots are free and available to anyone 11 years old and above and will be administered between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. at the Santa Fe County Fairgrounds on Rodeo Road. Whooping cough has been a stubborn problem for our state in recent years. The illness poses the greatest risks for infants and toddlers who are often unwittingly infected by older family members unaware they have it. The Santa Fe National Forest says today it has now completed aerial mulching operations over portions of the Tres Lagunas fire burn scar. The area had been reseeded recently, and some 500 tons of straw was dropped over 5 days to hold moisture in place and aid in seed sprouting. In addition to providing forest regrowth, the treatments will also help reduce rain runoff. In other news from the affected area, after careful evaluation, state police say they have lifted the roadblock on New Mexico State Road 63 as of noon. Access to some Pecos Wilderness campgrounds and hiking trails is also being restored. Tomorrow evening at 6 p.m., the Pewaukee Valley High School hosts an open house on the Pewaukee Basin Regional Water System. The U.S. Department of the Interior's Bureau of Reclamation is proposing to construct a system to provide drinking water to the pueblos of San Ildefonso, Pewaukee, Nambe, and Tusuki, and to county residents within the basin. The proposed project would divert water from the Rio Grande at the Pueblo de San Ildefonso, as outlined under terms of the 2010 Amit Litigation Settlement Act. That law guarantees access to some 4,000 acre-feet of water annually to residents of the basin. The Walt Disney Company, which produced the Made in New Mexico Lone Ranger starring Johnny Depp, has acknowledged its hoped-for summer blockbuster is a dud. The film is expected to lose between $160 and $190 million after Disney's heavy promotional spending failed to generate box office returns. The film created some 2,000 jobs in New Mexico over the course of its seven-month shooting schedule. New Mexico's most recent winners of the Hot Lotto jackpot stepped forward Tuesday to claim their $7.6 million prize. Doug and Roberta Bernard of Rio Rancho had only begun to play the game about 2 weeks ago. They won this past Saturday's drawing with a quick pick ticket, which has odds of winning pegged at 1 in $29 million. Santa Fe County is reminding folks that the annual county fair will begin tomorrow and run through Sunday. The event features numerous livestock shows and auctions, as well as food and entertainment. It takes place at the county fairgrounds on Rodeo Road between the Chavez Center and the Santa Fe Rodeo Grounds. And weather for Santa Fe, a 40% chance for scattered thunderstorms both today and tomorrow. Partly sunny skies, highs in the low 80s. And the current Santa Fe temperature now 75 degrees. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
This is Martha Burke, host of Equal Time. Join me weekly for 2 minutes of Equal Time commentary every Saturday during the Bob Edwards Show. We'll explore politics, public affairs, and what's new in the news. Be with us, 2 minutes of Equal Time, right before 8 a.m. every Saturday during the Bob Edwards Show. Don't miss it.
It's a world of diversity on KSFR.
And back now at the news desk as At Noon segues to today's feature stories. A number of New Mexicans are in arrears on child support payments. This week, the state is allowing people with outstanding bench warrants for overdue support payments amnesty. Joining us is Matt Kennicott from the New Mexico Human Services Department. Matt, how many warrants are out for late or absent child support payments?
Well, as of this morning, we've got about 600 outstanding bench warrants. That represents about $550,000 in arrears that are owed by severely delinquent non-custodial parents.
And ignoring the warrant can lead to incarceration, correct?
Absolutely. The point of the project that we have right now is to say, hey, look, you guys are so late on paying your child support that you have a bench warrant, but we're going to give you one more opportunity to come in during this amnesty week, which ends Friday at 5 p.m., and pay up on your bench warrant and get that money directly to your child. If these folks with bench warrants do not pay up, then they definitely face a risk of being arrested, and we're actually working with New Mexico State Police and other local law enforcement agencies in order to conduct a bench warrant roundup of these individuals in the next few weeks. These warrants are civil warrants. However, the only real release is if the non-custodial parent actually pays the cash bond on the bench warrant. So somebody could sit in jail for quite a long time if they don't work out arrangements to get the money to pay this bench warrant while they're in jail.
What happens if someone turns themselves in but doesn't have enough money to pay off what's owed?
Well, what they can do is come into any one of our 14 offices around the state, and we can, with the permission of the custodial parent of the child, work out other payment arrangements. So if somebody is deeply in arrears, we can work out other payment arrangements. The other thing to keep in mind is that during this amnesty week, we're mainly looking for payment of the bond on those bench warrants. So if they get those bench warrants paid off, they're in the clear. That means that their child is getting the money that they're due. But either way, come into an office and talk to us, and we'll help talk to the custodial parent to hopefully work out other payment arrangements.
And even in spite of the economy, New Mexico has been doing a relatively good job of collecting these late payments, have they not?
Yeah, we have. And, you know, the Child Support Bench Warrant Program, it was announced by Governor Martinez 2 years ago. Since that time, we've collected over $600,000 just through the Bench Warrant Program. Last year, though, fiscal year in New Mexico, we collected over $129 million in child support. That was $12 million greater than the goal set by the Legislative Finance Committee for our Child Support Enforcement Division. So we're making great strides in the collection of child support for the children of this state. And, you know, that's not to say that there's not always more work to do, but we're making good strides, and we're making people aware that they need to pay up on their child support bills.
For the procrastinators out there, they need to be aware that the amnesty being offered is for a limited time only?
The amnesty period happens once a year. This is a special once a year that we're able to give folks who have these child support bench warrants. So if you have a child support bench warrant, come into any one of the offices, any one of the 14 offices throughout the state of New Mexico, and start the process of making alternative payment arrangements and get those bench warrant bonds paid off. The amnesty period does end for this year at 5 p.m. this Friday.
How can someone find out if they've had a warrant issued?
Yeah, we actually keep a very updated list on our website. We're updating almost daily at this point. That's www.hsd.state.nm.us. And on the right-hand side, there's a link that's called Bench Warrant Program, and we keep an updated list of all of the Child Support Enforcement Division bench warrants right there on that website.
Anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
If anybody has a bench warrant, please come in. We can work with you. We give you this amnesty period in order to help you clear up these bench warrants. And bottom line is that the money is going straight to the child. The court doesn't take any, and the state doesn't take any. It's going to help the child.
Matt Kennicott from the New Mexico Human Services Department, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
15 minutes past the hour as At Noon on KSFR continues. Here's a sound from nature many residents of western states may recognize. Those sounds you just heard are the vocalizations of a prairie dog, and leads us into our next story. Last year, a Los Lunas, New Mexico gun shop hosted a controversial coyote hunting contest. Now, that same business is sponsoring a prairie dog hunting contest, offering a new semi-automatic rifle to the person killing the highest number of the animals. Raymond Watt is with the organization Prairie Dog Pals, and he joins us now. Raymond, first, let's start. Tell us about the prairie dogs that live in our state.
Well, the prairie dogs we have in New Mexico, primarily in Santa Fe, Albuquerque area, are Gunnison's prairie dogs. They're one of three species of prairie dogs. Actually, four when you consider there's a Mexican prairie dog, too. And they're a species which has been around for thousands of years. And what we have happening in Albuquerque and Santa Fe is a real fragmentation of their former areas. Most of the time you find prairie dogs on very small lots and between freeways and roads and things like that. And, you know, these are the prairie dogs that we try to rescue and move to larger areas where they can live out their lives and not have to be subject to harassment or being run over or that kind of thing. But if you can imagine several hundred years ago, much of Albuquerque and much of Santa Fe were just vast prairie dog colonies, uninterrupted by roads and housing developments and so on. And, you know, these colonies would contain thousands upon thousands of animals. And what we have now is just a minute fragment of what existed. And this is the case with all prairie dog species. It's estimated that 95% of the prairie dog species are gone. We only have about 5% left.
So how many are currently living here?
That's a good question. We think there's probably 10,000 or so of the Gunnisons spread out. It's very hard to make a determination because many of these animals are on private land, and the population does fluctuate with spring when they have pups. It goes up, and when you have these kind of contests and things like this, it goes back down. So it's hard to determine, but I do know that the species overall is in decline. There are fewer and fewer prairie dogs every year, and as I said before, it's a small number compared to what it used to be.
And it's believed they actually have a form of language, correct?
That is true. There's been some research done on prairie dogs, and it has been determined that they have a vocalization pattern that's quite unique. They have, for example, they have sounds for coyotes. They have a different sound for a domestic dog. They'll have a sound for a person who is perceived as wanting to harm them, you know, maybe somebody with a gun, and they'll have a different sound for somebody who might want to help them, such as feeding them, and of course for birds and things like that, hawks, different sounds. So what they do is they'll communicate this to the rest of the colony. Normally, the prairie dogs that exist on the outside of a colony are the kind of the warning dogs. They'll communicate the danger to the rest of the colony, and it just gets repeated throughout the colony until, you know, every animal is aware that there's a danger and which direction it's coming from, and whether it's from the air or from a particular side of the colony. So it's very sophisticated, and prairie dogs are quite sociable and really quite intelligent animals. I think people underestimate them.
What do prairie dogs subsist on?
Their primary food is grasses, small seeds, things like that. And it's quite amazing because when you look at a prairie dog colony, you can see that sometimes there seems to be virtually nothing to eat. They can exist on almost nothing, and they do get most of their moisture from the grasses they eat. So the prairie dogs did have a bad time during the drought. We're getting some more rains now, and grasses are growing, so they're able to get their nutrition and their moisture from that grass. But during the drought, they did suffer quite a bit.
Can the animals damage property?
They are capable of damaging land. How significant that is, it's really hard to say. I think, ranchers and farmers have always had it out for prairie dogs, even before this territory was colonized for ranching and farming. Prairie dogs were kind of, they had a price on their head, let's put it that way. They were shot indiscriminately, poisoned, trapped. They've really been maligned over the years. And what we see now, we do have ranchers and farmers who complain about prairie dogs, and a lot of these animals actually live on the periphery of the ranch. They're just trying to eke out a life wherever they can. They live on very marginal land, and I tell farmers, and ranchers, if they can coexist with wildlife, that's really the best thing. And the fact that they do use land that's not being used for farming is a good thing.
Are they themselves edible?
They're not edible. Although I understand that some of the tribes in the past did eat them when other game was scarce, and particularly after a lot of the buffalo were killed off in New Mexico. Prairie dogs, I think, kept a lot of tribes going for a while. So they do have a certain amount of respect within the Indian community.
And how can they be relocated humanely?
What we do, what Prairie Dog Pals does, is we will go in and relocate them to other areas. And there are a couple other groups that do this. Relocation is really the best way to go, and we've done it for years and years, and we know the best way to do it where the survival rate is extremely high. Virtually none die as a result of relocation. Now, it's a different story when they get out to their new area because now they're subject to predation from hawks and coyotes and so on. So, and that may not be something that they experience within the city area. But relocation is probably the best way to go. The problem we're having is areas to put them in, because obviously most private landowners do not want them on their property. So we have to find city-owned land or federal land, something like that, we can take them to.
And anything else you'd like to add?
We really want people to try to understand prairie dogs more and coexist with them, because they're a species that's been around here for a long, long time. They're part of the New Mexico landscape. They're not an introduced species. They've coexisted with buffalo and coyotes and wolves and Indian tribes for generations. It's one of the many species that's in trouble. And I would hope that people just try to learn a little bit about prairie dogs, go watch them at a local colony, and you'll really find they're quite interesting and quite amazing creatures.
Raymond Watt of Prairie Dog Pals, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. And if you're interested in getting more information, Raymond says you can visit the website prairiedogpals.org. And at noon, we'll continue now in just a moment.
Santa Fe has just experienced the two driest years on record, and the drought is not going away. In times like these, we have to save every drop. One way is to water during the cool part of the day. If you water when it's hot, the water evaporates, plants can burn, and you could be fined. Under city rules, you cannot water between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. from May 1st to October 31st. So, water when it's cool outside. It's better for your garden. It's better for our water future. And it's the law. A message from the City of Santa Fe.
12:24 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. More and more dogs are being used as aids for people who are ill or have disabilities. But there are some important distinctions to be made among these dogs. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard joins us now to file this report.
Hush, I'm going to do the story on dogs right now. While many of us have dogs as pets, for some people, a dog can be a vital helper and tool. There are two classifications for dogs who aid folks with various illnesses or disabilities. Dee Martinez is with the Governor's Committee on Disabilities.
An assistance dog is an emotional support animal or comfort animal, and they're often used as part of a medical treatment plan or as therapy animals. These animals provide companionship, they relieve loneliness, and sometimes help with depression and certain phobias, but they do not perform tasks that assist people with disabilities. They do not have special training to assist persons with disabilities, like service animals do.
Assistance dogs are not welcomed everywhere.
They cannot go into public places like service animals are, public access buildings. But they are allowed in housing and airplanes.
As opposed to an assistance dog, a service dog is specifically trained for certain tasks based on a person's needs.
Well, the example of tasks for service animals are a lot of us know about guide dogs. They help people with a blind. They alert people who are deaf. They pull a wheelchair. They alert people. They're protecting people who are having a seizure. They calm a person with PTSD during an anxiety attack. And they assist with balance and stability. The dog can be trained by an organization, or it can be trained by the handler. It takes approximately 2 years to train a service dog. And it can range anywhere from $500 for the beginning for some organizations, but it can be up to $20,000 for the dog and the training.
Service dogs are allowed in most locations.
They're allowed in every public place that is where the public is admitted.
It's important to understand that a service dog is not a pet. An important piece of legislation regarding these dogs was passed in the last session.
With the passage of Senate Bill 320 during the 2013 legislative session, the New Mexico Assistance Animal Act has been amended to read the Service Animal Act. Now, the Service Animal Act recognizes only dogs and miniature horses. And I want to stress it's not miniature ponies. It's miniature horses under 100 pounds. Now, this change makes New Mexico law more in alignment with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Dee Martinez from the Governor's Committee on Disabilities.
Yes, that's what she said. She said miniature horse. I didn't make that up.
Oh, for KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Jim Hightower returns to Santa Fe on August 24th in a benefit for KSFR. Join us on Saturday the 24th for a talk and reception at Museum Hill Cafe starting at 5:30. Tickets are $35 and proceeds benefit the station. To reserve your seat, visit us online at ksfr.org or call 428-1527. That's 428-1527 for an evening with Jim Hightower on August 24th at the Museum Hill Cafe. And you can now catch Hightower's commentaries on KSFR weekday afternoons right before Democracy Now!
12:28 here in the KSFR newsroom. As we approach the bottom of the hour, it is now time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I hate blowers. There I said it, and I feel better for it. I'm not talking about like glass blowers. That has to be incredibly difficult to do, being a glass blower. Nor am I referring to Damien Rice's song, The Blower's Daughter, featured in 2004's She Did, He Did, They All Did the Didders movie, Closer. No, I am referring to the dumbest machine in the history of mankind and possibly all kind, the leaf blower, the backpack blower, whatever you want to call it, you know, very noisy. Air comes out of a funnel held by whomever. A few nights ago, self-sustained winds were about 20, 25 miles per hour, gusting to 35 to 40 miles per hour, and some nearby folks had someone out using the dumbest machine in the world, the leaf blower, and paying him for it. The money, my friend,
is blowing in the wind.
For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.